in a stadium rich with tradition.
We have that here, and it reeks. And when you come in, teams take the field, they can feel it.
The lights shine the brightest.
Definitely playing at Camp Randall is one of the best places to play in college football.
This is The Camp. Now, here's your host, Zach Heilprin, and The Athletic's Jesse Temple on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network.
Yes, welcome in to The Camp here on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network. I'm Zach Heilprin. He's Jesse Temple. Well, we got plenty of stuff to get through, Jesse. Obviously, spring practice going on. Badgers were on the field for a fourth time on Tuesday morning, and they'll be back out there on Thursday morning. And assuming the weather is okay, we will be there as well, as they are allowing some media in to watch practice. So we're going to be able to get a look at the Badgers for the first time in practice since fall of 2019, August of 2019. That's going to be fun. We'll get to some of the news coming out of spring ball through the first week and week or so. But obviously, the big news story that came Tuesday that we had all been expecting for the past week or so, and that was Barry Alvarez announcing his retirement. After 30 plus years, first as coach, then as the athletic director, he is stepping down. And you know, we had the week to prepare for this, and a lot of people did a lot of preparing, including you. You had an opportunity to chat with a whole bunch of former players, guys that are familiar names for those that have been around Wisconsin and been watching Wisconsin for the last, 25 plus years. And they gave you stories that maybe a lot of people, including myself, had not heard before. But when you look at what happened today and just the whole program and everything that went around it, what were your initial thoughts?
Well, it was the right kind of celebration for someone who has had as much of an impact on a major college program as anybody in anywhere in the country. Like you said, we knew this was coming. Barry is 74 now. He's had an opportunity to be the athletics director and watch his grandsons play football. And really, he's accomplished everything that he set out to do. I think of the plan and the vision that he had when he got here. And everybody thought it was absolutely preposterous to say on your first day when the team has been awful for so long that you better get your season tickets now because before long you won't be able to. But he always knew what he wanted, and he talked about it during his session with reporters as well on Tuesday, that he wanted to go to a place where he could be the head football coach, keep success going, become the athletics director, and maintain that success, because that would follow in the footsteps of his coach at Nebraska, Bob Devaney, who did the same thing at Nebraska. And that's what he wanted to do when he was interviewing with Pat Richter way back when. So the fact that he accomplished all that, that he won three Rose Bowls, that he's a college football Hall of Famer and has Wisconsin well positioned for the future, I thought the ceremony on Tuesday was a great send-off for what's been an unbelievable three-decade run.
In your mind, and you've been covering this team now for over a decade, over a decade now. Close to a decade. What has he meant in your mind? What has he meant for Wisconsin in your time?
Well, I got here in 2011, so obviously his coaching tenure had ended, other than him returning for the 2013 Rose Bowl and the 2015 Outback Bowl. But I think it's just the confidence that he instilled in everyone and the lasting legacy that he left. And we had an opportunity to talk to Paul Christ later on Tuesday, and I asked Paul what he took from Barry, because Paul was obviously on Barry's staff way back when in 2002, he came here as the tight ends coach. And he just talked about how Barry, one of his first days, Paul asked him, what do you want from me as a coach? And Barry told him, be true to who you are. And he said that he's carried that with him for the last two decades, that, if you believe in yourself and the values that you establish, and you connect with players, that means everything. And so I think those are some of the things. I mean, look, I think the outside perception is not what it is around here, right? When Brett Bielema left, when Gary Anderson left, there was this perception that Barry is hovering over the football program. And there's no question that his success it will be hard for other coaches to replicate, including Bielema, for all his success. But I think that he established a winning culture, and the football coaches that came afterward had an opportunity to build on that. So that's what stands out to me.
It is an interesting legacy for him, because it is split into two, really. What he was able to do on the football field is one thing, and then to oversee an athletic department that was extremely successful, I think in large part due to the success of the football program in the early 90s, the money that was coming in allowed them to do so many other things, right? So, like, it does kind of, they are separate, but they're also kind of intertwined because of what the success on football that led to their success as an athletic department overall. Obviously, there was success within the athletic department before football got better, right? I mean, the hockey program was certainly up there. Rowing programs were certainly up there, but it wasn't program-wide. And, you know, we got to see, it was very Barry Alvarez-esque, and I'm sure it had nothing, he had nothing to do with it, but it was, you know, they did the media conference, press conference, and to his left, every trophy, every national trophy that they had won in his time was lined up. And not even national trophy, but like Big Ten trophy, Big Ten title trophy, Rose Bowls, like, but it wasn't just football, it was every sport. And afterwards he went over there and just put his arms up on it. Like, yeah, this is what I did. And obviously it involves so many more people, but it was a special day, you know, for him and something that he deserved.
Yeah. And yes, it goes hand in hand, the success of the football program and what happened afterward. And as you said, it's taken many, many people to sustain that success. But you look at in Alvarez's tenure as the athletics director, Wisconsin has won 73 conference or regular season or tournament titles, 16 team championships. Obviously, the women's hockey most recently, they've got six of them. But Barry said one of his proudest accomplishments is certainly the football program success and winning that first Rose Bowl when people didn't think it was possible in his fourth season. But the subsequent ability to sustain success, which doesn't happen without football, because as we know, attendance was terrible. It was a little over 40,000 officially in 1989. But the reality is the last game of the regular season, there were like, I don't know, 10,000 people there, probably less. And now the stands are relatively full. It's certainly much different now. The athletics department was $2.1 million in debt when Barry got here in 1990. So football is the engine that revs the rest of the athletics department. And without that success, I don't know what Wisconsin would look like, but clearly that success and the money, the revenue that football brought allowed for some of those other facilities to be built. Look at the Kohl Center, for example, where he did the event, the big celebration ceremony. The Kohl Center wasn't built until the late 90s. So that, I think, was indicative of what Barry was able to do early on at Wisconsin to establish that success and then sustain it.
It was. And, you know, obviously, I've now covered Wisconsin athletics for this will be my ninth year covering football. This fall will be my ninth year. But before that, for much of my life, I grew up in Wisconsin, going to Wisconsin football games. Family had season tickets all the way back to 1953. They saw a lot of bad football for a large portion of that time. And I was going there as a kid. My most vivid memory as a kid before Barry Alvarez showed up was Anthony Thompson running for what was a Camp Randall record. I think it was like 315 yards, right around there. I remember that. And then also I remember getting stung by a bee. So those were my memories of Camp Randall before Barry Alvarez got there. And after he got there, the memories at that stadium and the Rose Bowl are memories that heavily dominate my childhood. And so obviously when he retired in 2005, it was very, you know, as a football coach after the 2005 season, it was very, I don't want to say emotional, but it hit you pretty good for fans, I think. And obviously he's gone on to do such great things as the athletic director, but I owe a lot of my favorite childhood memories to him and to what he was able to do at that football stadium. And obviously him going out the way he did today was very well-deserved. And I'm sure we haven't heard the last of Barry Alvarez at Wisconsin. And he said he'll keep his finger in it. And I think he already said people are calling him to consulting work and that type of thing. But it is going to be different because he has been the face, essentially the face of that athletic department, even when football coach, since 1990. It's going to be different with him not being that national face.
It is. And I think you are like many people of our generation and even older people that their fondest memories of athletics and sports in general are watching that turnaround that Wisconsin football had. And for so many that are older than us, I think they thought that they would never see the day where that happened. There was a stretch there where they were so bad, especially under Don Morton They ran the Veer offense. They fumbled 111 times during his 3-year tenure, and they went 3-21 in the Big Ten, 6-27 overall, where people just thought, God, wouldn't it be great if Wisconsin could play in a bowl game, if they were just borderline respectable? And for Barry to do what he did, I think that's clearly why he's so revered, no doubt about it. But people, their fondest memories as sports fans are those years. And so you're certainly not alone there. But to your statement about the future is going to be different. Yeah, there's no question about it. It's hard to replace a legend like that, but that's obviously the task that Chancellor Rebecca Blank is going to have on her hands. I know that Barry's top choice is Chris McIntosh, who played for him, who's got a high ranking role within the athletic department. And Barry was asked about McIntosh during his press conference with reporters. And certainly he praised Chris, but understands that the decision's not going to be up to him. And this is going to be a national search, and they're going to get a lot of quality candidates. And there is an obvious short list just looking at who has ties to the school. But it remains to be seen how that plays out. But like I asked Paul Christ on Tuesday, you know, what his thoughts were, what is important to him on the traits that the next AD has. And he's just confident that they're going to pick out the right one. I don't know what else he would say, but this is an important job and hiring that you can't mess up. And I honestly don't think they will, because they have so many quality candidates, particularly people who already understand Wisconsin's athletics department.
Is it a little funny, though, that they are using a search committee to replace a guy who was the search committee for many people?
Yes, pretty ironic, I think. That is interesting. But, you know, Barry can't make this hire, so I guess that's how it goes.
He can't make it. I know, obviously, that there, you know, when he picked Brett, you know, there was a little pushback from the university. And then certainly the way that Bo Ryan went about, you know, wanting to give Greg Gard an opportunity, it feels like there's just a pattern of the coach, successful coach, wanting to pick the successor. Saw it with Dick Bennett too. But in this situation, it seems like it's going to be a very detailed, process driven decision that is going to be made ultimately, you're right, by Chancellor Rebecca Blank. And we'll see. As we were recording this on Tuesday night, she promised more details on the process on Wednesday, so we'll certainly hear more about it. But that was Barry Alvarez and that situation on Tuesday. Over the past week and a half, though, we've gotten some updates from football. Wisconsin started practice late in March.
March 30th.
They've been on the field for four practices. They put on the pads the last time they get some hitting done, I should say, these last few practices. And as I mentioned before, we are going to be able to get into practice, the weather permitting, for quite a few of these last, what they got left now, 11 practices left. We're hopeful to be able to see a majority of those. But before we get to that point, you know, we have to talk about some of the things that have come out of our press availabilities, whether with Paul Christ or Jim Leonard, or the quarterbacks, or with the defensive line and defensive line coach Ross Kalaji. Of all those opportunities that we had a chance to talk with people, which one was the most interesting and most telling for you?
Well, so far, for people who don't know, and I think you touched on it, we talked to Paul Christ once before spring practice started. So that would have been last Monday. We talked to Jim Leonard. That'll be the, if I'm not mistaken, the only time that we talked to him this spring. And the idea is that we're going to get to talk to each assistant coach and members of those position groups. And we've talked to the quarterbacks and the defensive linemen. For me, it's the quarterbacks, just because it's the more interesting position. I wound up writing a story on Graham Mertz, because why not? He's Graham Mertz. But I thought it was interesting that the quarterbacks talked about some of the changes that Paul Christ has brought to the quarterback room. Obviously, John Budmeyer was the quarterback's coach the last 3 years. Now he's the offensive coordinator at Colorado State. And Wisconsin can only have 10 full-time assistants. Those are the NCAA rules. So rather than bring on another quarterback's coach, Wisconsin ultimately went out and hired a cornerback's coach to help Jim Leonard out with the secondary, since Leonard was coaching both the corners and the safeties. And that meant that Paul was in position to take over as the quarterback's coach, when he's also the offensive coordinator now, handling the plays, and or he's the play caller, however you want to put it, and he's the head coach. But Danny Vanaboom and Graham Mertz and Chase Wolf all talked about that Paul has taken what they called a bit of a more holistic approach, emphasizing everything like that goes into being a quarterback. It's not just progressions and reads. They're doing a lot of checks, a lot of learning about the run game. And I thought that was pretty interesting. I mean, that's some inside baseball type stuff, but hopefully if you're listening, you're into that sort of thing. They talked about doing more board work and having just a better grasp of the overall offense. I thought that was pretty interesting, but ultimately I wrote my main story about Mertz because the offense has so many pieces returning, but frankly, it only goes as far as Graham can take it because of how talented he is. And we've learned that he was dealing with an injury to his throwing shoulder last season, which we didn't know about during the season. And he didn't make any excuses about it, but certainly it makes you wonder how much that contributed to his inaccuracy. Because even during the season, when we talked about it, it was head scratching, right? It was like, where has the accuracy gone? We saw him in the opener against Illinois, and I'm not going to put it all on the shoulder injury, but it was interesting to hear him talk about that and just learn a little bit more about maybe some of the struggles that Wisconsin endured.
I have to imagine he wasn't happy that was probably put in that article by Mike Lucas, because it does come across as a bit of an excuse, even though Graham certainly was not using it as one.
Yeah, and he made a point of saying that. He said, having a little banged up shoulder doesn't justify losing three games and playing like that. I'm not going to sit here and make that an excuse, because it's not. On the other hand, if it was brought up in an interview with Graham, then it's fair game to put in, but it is UW Badgers, and I was a little surprised to see it in there, but there's no doubt that he took a dip in his performance, but so did the rest of the team. But he also happened to be playing three pretty darn good defenses in Northwestern, Indiana, and Iowa. So those were some interesting revelations from the quarterback room. But Graham has put in a lot of work this offseason. He took a few days to decompress after he got done with the season, and then he really dove into the film work, and he went step by step. He was breaking down coverages, his throws, every single cut up. And he feels like, and this is what he said, it's clear as day now on what I need to do. And that's the fun thing. This is the chunk of time where you really get to put that to work. So I think we're going to see a much better version of Graham, certainly this year, with everything he had to deal with, having COVID, having no weapons offensively for a lot of the season. And I think if you're a Badgers fan, you just have to be excited when you look at the offense and see how many pieces are returning around Graham.
I think you're right about the quarterbacks. That is obviously the most important thing. And we'll get to Jim Leonard, because him talking about his decision for staying at Wisconsin. But the defensive line, I thought, was also interesting. And we got some one-liners from Ross Kalaji, which were great. You know, certainly to him talking about Matt Hedingson just being a genius academically and a freak athletically, and getting him back, and he's 100%. He even said that he's back to the point where he, like 3 to 4 months after tearing the bicep, that he was getting, you know, PRs in the weight room 3 to 4 months after that, after the surgery. So he's all the way at 100% back and back in the field. And to me, that's a huge addition. They missed him last year. I know that they were able to make do with Isaiah Loudermilk and Garrett Rand, even though those guys were dinged up and having to use, you know, even using Keanu Benton in the nickel at times. Getting Matt Hedingson back is significant.
Yeah, it's absolutely huge. And he didn't have an opportunity to play much last year because he got injured against Michigan, and he told us that he tore his bicep muscle, which sounds like a terrible injury. But like Kalaji mentioned, being a freak athlete helped him to get back a little quicker than he had anticipated. But you look at last season, and this is from Pro Football Focus, the snap counts. The defensive ends at Wisconsin played 801 snaps last season. 628 of those snaps belong to Isaiah Loudermilk and Garrett Rand. Both of those guys have obviously since moved on. And really, it's Hedingson and a bunch of other guys with not a ton of experience. Hedingson has the starts that he got in the last couple of years. And Isaiah Mullins played 111 snaps last season. So he's really the only other experienced guy at defensive end. And I think based on the fact that they made him available, and based on the fact, if you look at the roster, he's probably in the best position to be the other starting defensive end alongside Hedingson. But I thought we did learn a bunch of stuff that was interesting as well, because Rodus Johnson got the most praise. This is the time of year when we haven't seen practice yet, when we're asking coaches and players, who has stood out to you, which young guys, because we don't know, because we haven't seen a practice in 20 months. And Kalaji and Bryson Williams both said Rodus Johnson, and Williams said that Johnson was at practice on Saturday, he was running faster than some linebackers. So you could take that for what it's worth. But it just seems like, based on that comment, that perhaps Johnson could be in position to step into more of a playing role. And the other interesting thing, and maybe this was one of the more intriguing developments from that interview session, was talking to Bryson Williams, because we saw on the roster that he was listed at 280 and he was 300 pounds last year. But he said that after he got hurt, he dealt with some knee injuries as a sophomore in 2019. He ballooned up to 320 pounds and he said he felt terrible. He wasn't any better than he was at 290. He was slower and he was worse. And he said he lost 60 pounds. He dropped all the way down to 260 so he could then build back up good weight. And now he said he's around 285. He hopes to get to 295 when the season starts. But Williams is a guy who started as a freshman when Olive Sangopolu got hurt. And then he got hurt. And Keanu Benton happened to be awesome and took his opportunities. And so Williams has been practicing, from what he said, not only at nose guard, but also at defensive end. And so I just wonder, could he be an option because he's got a little bit more position flexibility? And the last thing I'll mention is Jim Leonard said when we talked to him that last year they played what he called 70% in the nickel. And as a result, when you have five defensive backs on the field, that meant there wasn't much action for either Keanu or Bryson. And so I think it's really important for those guys to find a bigger role if they have more position flexibility. So there's a lot of intrigue up front for sure.
There definitely is. What was Kalaji's line about Keanu Benton talking about his ceiling?
He said not many guys come through here with the talent and ability and the ceiling that he has. He talked about how special Keanu is, how great his athleticism is, that he can understand how to pressure and use his body to fend off blockers. But we've been seeing this since he was a freshman. It's almost a shame that he didn't get to play more last season because of what he's capable of, but it's clear that Kalaji thinks very highly of him, and rightfully so.
Right. Isn't the importance, though, of him being able to play a little defense? I mean, there is essentially a defensive tackle when they go in the nickel, right? Like, it's not, you know, with the two down linemen, he's not really a defensive end. He's a defensive tackle, essentially. And isn't it vital for him to be able to play that spot? Because so few teams are going to allow them to have three linemen on the field at the same time.
Yeah, I think so. And ultimately, it comes down to who Kalaji feels like are the two best guys to be on the field in that situation, just because you're like, it doesn't mean it's going to be Henningsen and Mullins. It could be Henningsen and Benton or something right, like that. So yeah, I think, and that's something that Keanu even talked about with us last season, just trying to be more versatile as a player, because those are opportunities where he could be on the field and it's taking him out of the game. So if he can be a disruptive force, then he needs to be out on the field. And I think we very well could see more of that this season.
I'm interested to see and you talked about Rodus Johnson, but I'm interested to see what it looks like. A guy that has been unbelievable through three practices suggests that he's doing something special. Right. And, you know, you mentioned having to, you know, kind of parse what people are saying to get an idea of what's happening at practice without being able to see it. It was kind of like last fall, right? Like where we heard about Chimray Dike and we heard about Nick Herbig. And again, this is very early in camp, but that's kind of the same buzz that you get out of Rodus Johnson.
Yeah, it is. And again, we have to take it for what it's worth, because we haven't seen it. So we're relying on other people. And I hope when we do get to see it, that it's confirmed, or we at least have a better understanding. And when we get on here to talk next, we can talk from our own experiences watching it. But I think it's vitally important to develop some of these young guys, because if you look at the entire roster, and this includes, and I don't think we've talked about Isaac Townsend, who is coming in as a transfer from Oregon. He's going to be a defensive end, and I think he could have an impact. But other than Henningsen and Mullins, all the other guys who are going to be on scholarship next season that are defensive ends, if I'm not mistaken, have combined to play 35 college snaps. That is not very much experience. And I asked Kalaji about that too. What is his level of concern? And he acknowledged that the game experience and even defensive two deep practice experience is fairly limited and it's young, but he said, am I concerned? Absolutely not. The guys in the building, they're in the building for a reason, and they're confident in their talent and abilities and their work ethic to get where they need to be. But it's one thing to say that, it's another to put it into action. And they've got a lot of guys that really haven't played very much. And that's part of the reason why I do wonder if Townsend can come in and make an immediate impact, because I think he's got the talent to do it.
Did it raise your eyes at all when you asked him, or I'm not sure if it was you or somebody else asked, I think it was you, that the biggest change for him going from strength coach to, you know, defensive line coach recruiting. And like, it didn't seem like he was jazzed about it. I don't know. Maybe it was just having to be on social media part. I don't know, but it didn't feel like he was extremely, extremely excited about having to, you know, that being a huge, huge part of his role. Obviously he knew it was going to be, he doesn't take the job without it, without knowing that, without, you know, expressing an ability to do that. And Paul Chris certainly would not have put him in that spot otherwise, but it was a little eye opening.
It was not a particularly expansive answer. That is true. I will also admit that when we do these Zoom interviews, I try to ask multiple questions within my question. So I also asked him a second question, just about what he was trying to do differently or what he was bringing that an okay Brechterfield didn't, which also wasn't an expansive answer. But sometimes I wonder if maybe the guys are just focused on one part of the answer. But when we can only ask two questions in a Zoom session, you got to get as much in as you can when you do have an opportunity to talk. But I will say, when we talked to Saeed Khalif, who's the director of player personnel, back in December during the early signing period, he acknowledged, and I think it's worth repeating, that recruiting on the defensive line is the hardest position to recruit because of how difficult it is to project these guys and what their bodies are going to be like in college. And I have to imagine it was even more difficult during this COVID year, trying to get guys. They only got one defensive lineman in this class, Mike Jarvis, who's a three-star recruit from New Jersey, and he's an early enrollee. So I wonder how much that goes into it too, is not only are you new to recruiting, but you have to recruit a position that your own director of player personnel has said is the absolute hardest position to recruit.
Yeah, no doubt. You got an opportunity to ask Jim Leonard, you asked him about the defensive line, and it felt like he was going to stop at the defensive line, and we almost went on to the next question, and he's like, no, we got some more positions to go here. So he went through all the rest of the positions, and it ended up being like a 7-minute answer. I think it's worthwhile. I'm going to throw it in here. People can listen to it. If they don't want to listen to it, just forward on ahead, and we'll pick up the conversation on the other side. Just, this is Jim Leonard. He's done it before. He just breaks it down position by position. So here is Jim Leonard.
I think first off, starting with the D-line, you really have Keanu Benton, and we lost Henningsen for the majority of the season last year. So behind that, there really hasn't been a lot of reps. You know, Bryson Williams has played at times and played well for us. And, you know, Isaiah Mullins has played some for us. But outside of that, there really is not a lot of experience. So spring's going to be huge. You know, I think Coach Chris hit with our team the other day. There's like 44% of our team has never went through spring ball. You know, so from a development and an experience standpoint, this spring is going to be huge to see kind of who starts to separate with injuries and different things throughout last year. The number of these guys kind of got bumped into that two deep where they were preparing to play. They just didn't end up getting a lot of game reps because there weren't very many last season. So I think that whole group, there's a lot to be learned. You know, obviously with Coach K coming in and having the change at the position level there, and just going to continue to push and see what we can get guys comfortable with, and whether it's technique and scheme, and come out of the spring, I think, with a much better picture of who that group is, what the depth is going to be, and what we can ask them to do.
Jake?
I guess there's many other positions that we were going to talk about too. So I got cut off here. Long pause.
Sorry, please continue.
Outside backer. Right. You talked about Noah. We know the consistency that he's played with, and Nick Herbig kind of took a tremendous amount of reps for us last season for a true freshman. We know how we want them to progress going through. Some other names, you look at Spencer Lytle, where he's at with his progression. It's really time this spring for him to push for more opportunities. CJ Getz had a decent amount of snaps for us last year. Aaron Witt came on as the season progressed, another true freshman that you see work in the right direction. I think right now that group, and there's going to be a number of young guys, TJ Boulders here this spring, they're just going to benefit from really their first opportunity in the spring to get on the field. And you know, we like certain aspects of the skill set of that group of what we have. Isaiah Green May, another name. I don't have a roster in front of me, so just bouncing through names as they come through my head. Obviously, he's played a decent amount of snaps for us in the past before the injury, a couple injuries. So we like the depth we have. We like the variation in the skill set and the issues that that group can provide. It's going to just continue to push them to be that impactful playmaker week in and week out. Inside backer, we obviously know about Sanborn and Leo, and they were kind of the workhorses last year and took the majority of the reps. And behind them, a number of guys that you're excited to develop and push and see how it plays out this spring. You know, with Jordan Turner, Muma, Malik Reed, Jake Chaney, Tatum Grass, Mike Mascalunas obviously is around. There's most of that group kind of fits in the same category of going, all right, who's going to separate and who's going to really take leadership and ownership of the position. And we liked some of the things that we've seen. And so we haven't had to get past Leo and Jack very often because of the way they've been able to play. And we know we want to continue to develop that group and we have a lot of talent in those rooms, and we really want to see how the spring plays out for them. On the back end, there's not many new faces. Obviously, we have a ton of depth and returning experience in that group, and just asking them to continue to develop as playmakers. You know, we've played great defense. You know, we wouldn't be able to do what we do on third down if they're not playing well. Right. So now it's continuing to push them to find opportunities to make plays on the football, create turnovers. And I'm not afraid to play guys. And we have a lot of depth. There's a number of players that were ready to play. We saw it in the Wake Forest game. I think there was 8 corners that played in that game and they all played well. Right. Not to say that we didn't give up yards, but we played well. They had opportunities down the field. And I'm really excited for the corner group to just come out here and continue to battle. You know, bringing in Coach Poteet, it's just more and more attention given to a position that is very technical, right? So that group, I'm excited for their growth coming up this spring and even seeing this winter, just with having more attention being able to be given to them, not having to split time with the corners and safeties as much as far as coaching points and techniques and all that type of stuff. So, that group, I think, is going to benefit tremendously from having Coach Poteet and love what he's brought to the table so far. The safety group, you know, you got Colin and Scott, who've played a lot of reps for us. I thought Scott had a really, really good year, was very pleased with what he was able to do last year. And we lose Eric Burrell, who has been a consistent playmaker for us over the years, and a number of guys behind them that I think can compete to earn more reps and get in the rotation with Trey Blaylock, Titus Toler, John Torchio, Tyler Mays. They've all played, you know, a couple of them more 2 years ago than last year, but those guys have played and making the transition with Preston Zachman to the safety group as well. So I think we have great depth in that group. Once again, there's 6 guys who've already been on the field, which is going to be a lot of fun this spring to mix and match. And my big thing going in the spring with all position groups is to get them out of their comfort zone, right? Whether that's scheme, whether that's technique, awareness, pre-snap, post-snap, communication. If we let guys be comfortable, we're not doing our job in the spring. So we're continuing to push them. Not that we're always doing new things, but asking them to become more consistent and more dynamic in their job.
All right. So that was Jim Laird going position by position on the defense, what he sees. And that was, I think, a practice in. I think they were only a practice in the spring, much further along now, 4 yeah. practices in. But what'd you take from that, Jesse?
Well, I actually asked him if he could break down every position. So he followed through on my question. He stopped at the defensive line just because there's a lot of guys to get to. Look, there's a lot to be determined. And it was just one practice in, but he likes what he has is kind of my takeaway from that. That's my short answer. I thought there were more interesting storylines from that interview session. Cause like I said, I don't know that I necessarily learned a ton about who's doing what other than the names that perhaps we knew were in the mix to play. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
To me, and this was another question that I had asked him, and I thought this was a classic Jim Leonard answer too. The last time we talked to him was before he was offered the defensive coordinator role with the Green Bay Packers. And you and I have talked about this before, and I think a lot of fans have wondered this too, which is how I framed it, that I think there were people out there who assumed that if he was going to leave Wisconsin, it would be for a job like, say, the defensive coordinator role with the Green Bay Packers, where you can move on to the NFL, you can stay in the state, you don't have to be all that far from home, you're familiar with the state and that NFL team. And his answer, I thought, was great. He said, I think there's a nice little saying about assumptions that people always forget. And he went on to talk about that the beauty of his career is that it's his career. And he said to me, there's some unfinished business with the University of Wisconsin. That kind of became the headline in every story. But when he was asked later to elaborate on it, he talked about, first of all, he didn't want to go out like that in a COVID year with the way Wisconsin played. He said he would feel some type of way about that. And he believes that this program can win championships. They haven't been able to do that since he's been there. So I thought that was really interesting to hear. We knew how much he values Wisconsin and loves Madison and the university. But for him to say he feels like there's unfinished business and talk about what his goals were, I thought that was interesting.
It definitely was. And it was also the championship thing brought up just more conversations about whether Wisconsin can win a national championship. And it usually happens right around this time with the basketball team and whether a Wisconsin basketball or a football team is going to win a national title. Obviously the basketball team did, but in this era, if it's ever going to happen, and Jim Leonard believes it can happen. Does Jesse Temple believe it can happen or that it will happen?
Well, I'm not going to say never, because I think that's an insane statement.
But in your lifetime.
If I had to pick yes or no, I suppose I'm inclined to say no, simply because it seems like every year there's about six or eight programs that legitimately have an opportunity to win a national championship. And really, it's become the same programs every year. And it's not that Wisconsin can't get to that level. We saw how close they were, 2017. They're at midfield. They need to score. And if they do, they're in the college football playoff. They've been in the top eight in the CFP rankings going in the Big Ten championship like three times under Paul Chryst. But everything has to come together, and you also have to go through this team named Ohio State. And I know we talk about this before. Wisconsin has elevated its recruiting to a point that we had not seen before. They got a top 20 class coming in, and Ohio State is still having top five classes. They've already got the number one class in 2022, which hasn't signed yet. So they continue to play at on a different level too. So I certainly think Wisconsin can get to the college football playoff, but can they win two games against an Alabama or a Clemson back-to-back and win a national championship? I think that's an entirely different deal. So that's kind of where I'm at right now is I believe Chryst can get them to the playoff because of how close they've been. But I don't know that you can get to that next step by winning those two games. What are your thoughts on it?
I don't think I'm going to live long enough to see it. Well, but you're right. Never's a long time. I don't see it. But again,
do you see him getting to the playoff?
You're right. They were 43 yards away from making the playoff in 2017. They needed 43 yards. They didn't get it. There was a questionable penalty there on that drive, but they had their chances. They've had their chances. Like, it's all about getting past Ohio State, right? Like I guess 2016 was about getting past Penn State, but even with two losses, it was probably unlikely that they were going to get into the playoff in the same way. You know, 2 years ago in 2019, when they got that lead against Ohio State, but obviously we're not able to hold it. It's about beating Ohio. It's about getting through the season with one loss at max and then beating Ohio State. Cause I don't think anybody else in the East right now is really going to challenge Ohio State. And so can they do that? That's what they have to do to get to the playoff, which I think can happen. They've been able to play it at Ohio State's level in the last two Big Ten title games. They've done that. They had a huge lead against Penn State, the 2016 one, couldn't hold that, but they've been able to play at that level in the last two Big Ten championship games they faced them. There's no reason they can't win that game. It just, they have to play their best, and Ohio State can't play their best. So getting to the playoff is a possibility. Getting a national title, as you said, beating two teams like that, they'd essentially have to beat three teams like that, because you'd have to include Ohio State in that. that's very, very difficult to do. And I just don't see it happening. It feels like the haves are getting much stronger and the have nots are not closing that gap. Even though Wisconsin's better recruiting in these last, you know, especially this last class, it just feels like the haves are separating from everyone else even more so than they have in recent years. We know, it feels like we already know at the beginning of the year that it's going to be Clemson, Ohio State, and Alabama and who's the fourth team going to be. It just feels that way. It's that's the way it's going to be. And I don't see where that ends unless coaches leave, right? Like unless that, you know, Clemson could fall. You could see Clemson falling off if Dabo left, right? I don't know if that would happen at Alabama, though Alabama certainly had its down times. Ohio State, if Ryan Day were to leave, perhaps. But it just, it feels like a runaway train with those three teams, and it's very hard to catch it.
I would tend to agree. But again, never is a long time. And to bring this full circle, I think that the fact it starts with the coaching staff that believes this is a possibility and infuses that belief into the players is the starting point. And Wisconsin has been consistently good for a long, long time. So this is not as insane as Wisconsin winning a Rose Bowl under Barry Alvarez in year four. But Barry was the exact same way. He always believed, he instilled that confidence. And that was a big reason why Wisconsin got to where it was.
I thought it was one of the funnier stories. I mean, there were a bunch of funny stories today, but one of the funnier stories was that first season. Every time they lose, like, he would go in and watch the tape, and it was just, you know, they just weren't good enough. But he couldn't say that. He couldn't then go out and talk about that to the team when he needed to go. He needed to show strength in front of the team. But before he would go out there, he said he was curled up in the fetal position in his office because he just couldn't take it. He couldn't take losing like that. But then when he would go out, he'd talk him up. And it was the same way at the end of that season. Like, yeah, you know, this didn't work out, but we're going to get this going. And I'm going to, you know, all you seniors here, you're a part of it. And when we win the Rose Bowl, I'm going to come back and give you watches. And that's what he did. The guys that were not there in 93 season, the 94 Rose Bowl, but had been a part of the team the previous 3 years, they got something from that as well. They were a part of that process. And it was about the positivity driven by Barry Alvarez and his message, even though perhaps sometimes he wasn't feeling it. He needed to at least outwardly show that that's the way that he was going.
That's the sign of a real leader. And that's why Barry was so successful. I remember him telling me that story like 6 years ago. I did this really long oral history on the turnaround that Wisconsin had under Barry in the early years. And I mean, he believed even then that he had something, even though the team wasn't good enough. And he talked about it. They were in the game in the fourth quarter. They just didn't have enough talented players and they didn't have confidence or know how to win games. So that was a big part of establishing the culture, was telling the guys that this is possible, beating the hell out of them in preseason practice and practices, and getting them to a point where they were big enough, strong enough, and talented enough and believed enough that they could win these games. And yeah, it started with a 1-10 season, but there's a funny anecdote. I was talking to Dan McCarney, who was Barry's defensive coordinator. They're longtime friends. They coached together even before they were together at Wisconsin. The first game of the second season against Western Illinois, Dan said that they're running off the field at halftime. They're losing to Western Illinois, a 1AA team at the time. And apparently the fans were chanting, "Barry, Barry, Barry," and they're in the tunnel. And McCarney's like, "What the hell is going on? We're losing to the freaking Leathernecks." And Barry's like, "Just wait till we turn this thing around." So I think even early on, when Wisconsin still wasn't a particularly good football team, there was a palpable belief around the program, and Barry got it going, and the rest is history.
You mentioning Dan McCarney reminds me of your article. Is there one story within that, or two, one or two stories that are within that that stand out to you? I kind of like the one from Steve Malchow about Barry in the 1992 Ohio State game. I like that one. And then obviously Bernstein's camp story that he's told on prior, when he was the co-host of the show, it told it a couple different times. Jeff Mack told it once, but there's a couple of good ones in there, especially ones that I had not heard before.
Yeah. The Malchow was the SID, the football media contact, during a lot of Barry's tenure. And the one that he talked about was in 92, they were getting ready to play Ohio State. They had a Friday night pep rally, and Barry got up there and was revving up the crowd and was like, "And we're going to go kick Ohio State's butt." Ohio State was 12th in the country. Wisconsin hadn't beaten a ranked team. And Malchow's like, hey, why did you do that? They're going to relay that. There were TV stations from Columbus, Ohio there. And he's like, well, I guess the boys better, you know, cash the check tomorrow. And Wisconsin wound up winning the game. To me, anytime you can talk to Joe Panos, it's a good day, because he told a great story about, I guess, Barry and Illinois coach Lou Tepper had some bad blood back then, and Wisconsin needed to win that game. And that was during the Rose Bowl season. And apparently Barry told the team that he was going to go to midfield after the game and kick Lou Tepper's butt. Yeah. And it got everybody super fired up. But I really liked the story from when I was talking to Matt Bernstein. He put me in contact with Greg Root, who was his backup fullback. Not a superstar player at Wisconsin. And he even acknowledged he was a 2.0 type of student athlete. He said he was smoking a little bit of marijuana back then, and he actually failed a drug test. And he goes into the sauna the next day, and the only person in the entire facility is Barry sitting there in the sauna. And Barry looks at him and is just like, you don't pull enough rope to be smoking that dope. I love that story. And Greg said that he really took that with him, because it was like, you need to handle your business, and you can't be out here messing up if you've got this incredible opportunity in front of you. So there are 15 different stories in it. And if anyone's listening, I certainly strongly encourage you to read it and subscribe if you haven't. I think it really encompasses who Barry was as a kind of a master motivator, a disciplinarian, someone who loved to have fun with his players, and also a caretaker, a guy who really looked out for the best interests of his players.
What does this program look like? What does Wisconsin football look like if Barry Alvarez doesn't show up? I should do that story one time. I already subscribed to The Athletic, Jesse, of course, but if you wrote that article, that'd be a good one. What if Barry Alvarez doesn't show up, what happens?
I do not know. I think from that oral history that I did several years ago, if I'm not mistaken, I think Pat Richter was interested in hiring Don Nealon, who was not interested in the job. I think it's pretty safe to say Wisconsin would not be where it is today. And anybody who's around the program should feel fortunate that we get to watch winning, consistent teams that really is on a level that I think is unrivaled in major college sports, to see what the football and the men's basketball programs in particular have done. They've been to more combined bowl games and NCAA tournaments since 93-94 than any school in the country. So it's pretty special, and it wouldn't have been possible without Barry.
Definitely not. Certainly appreciate everyone listening. Next time we do a show, we will have seen, fingers crossed, weather. Please, weather, be good. We'll have seen a practice or two of Wisconsin spring, and we'll get an opportunity to chat actual football that we've seen. Jesse, thank you very much.
Thanks, Zach.
All right, there he is. Jesse Temple from The Athletic. You've been listening to The Camp here on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network.